Support for KNKX's studio sessions comes from the University of Puget Sound, an independent liberal arts university. Through scholarly engagement and collaborative education, Puget Sound prepares students for careers in the arts, sciences, research, and entrepreneurship. More at pugetsound.edu.
Hey, everybody, I'm Abe Beeson. Welcome to the KNKX Studios. We are in for a treat today with two of the most accomplished, respected, and busy guitar players in the world, Martin Taylor and Bruce Foreman. Coming back to Seattle from far across the Atlantic, Englishman Martin Taylor is the leading fingerstyle guitarist in jazz. He's worked with Stefan Grappelli in the Hot Club of France and with guitar legends Joe Pass, Herb Ellis, and Barney Kessel. All-American guitarist Bruce Foreman is a busy guy. He hosts podcasts and web streams, teaches a lot, including recent years at Centrum's Jazz Port Townsend. He plays in a variety of styles and bands, including his work on the soundtrack to the Oscar-winning film Million Dollar Baby. These two masters have generously offered to play a few songs in the KNKX studios today, so let's get that going. Please give a big KNKX welcome to Martin Taylor and Bruce Foreman.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Excited to have both Martin Taylor and Bruce Foreman in the studios today. First, let's start talking about the collaborations between you two. Had you played together before this encounter?
Yeah, we played together quite a few times, but our history goes back a lot further. It goes back to, I guess, the early 80s, and you were playing with Richie Cole, I was playing with Stefan Grappelli, and we always used to end our US tours in California. That's where I first met you. But we didn't play together at that time. It wasn't until much, much later. We had to wait in anticipation for this moment.
And Bruce, what do you think about duetting with Martin Taylor? What is that experience?
What do you think? I mean, it's great. I mean, I've been a huge fan of his playing and known about him and listened to him for a long time. And so it's just great to get the opportunity to make noise together.
Likewise.
I'm always curious when I hear two really terrific musicians kind of taking turns, going back and forth and back and forth. I'm sure you're listening very closely to what the other is doing, but is it a sense of trying to continue a thought that the other player is doing, or is it a matter of, oh, I'm going to show you up? I wonder if it's more competition or communication, conversation.
It's conversation, yeah. Really. And, you know, he might come up with a phrase, and I'll mess around with it. I'll throw that phrase back at him, or I'll continue it into somewhere else, which will take him in another direction. That just goes backwards and forwards. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we suddenly find ourselves playing exactly the same line, and that's really spooky. We sort of look at each other and go, wow, what happened there?
Yeah.
And Bruce, I think I caught you kind of laughing and grinning at something Martin had played during that set. And I wonder if you could talk about.
Sometimes it's like something that I just played that he'll play back at me, or I'll take it and do something with it, or some of these complete surprise and go, wow, I wish I'd thought of that. You know, and then I take something and I'll do something with it. And it's just staying on your. I mean, that's what jazz is. We're always listening to each other, and whoever's the soloist sort of has the primary direction of what's happening. But as when you're in a conversation, you can always everything from support it to comment on it to have a Tourette's moment. You know, you can just blurt something out. You know, and we all react to it and deal with it. And yeah.
But you know, one of the things that's you have to be very careful of is you get inspired, particularly you know when you're with a player that you know that you like and admire so much, like with Bruce, is you can find yourself kind of playing a little bit like them, you know, and copying their phrases. Right. It's a bit like you know you speak with somebody that's got a different accent, and you find yourself talking in their accent, you know, and so it's maintaining your own identity. At the same time, and very important not to be a competition, but at the same time you can throw, it's like ping pong, you can throw stuff backwards and forwards, and it's funny, it's done in really good humor,
right.
And when it all goes well, when you get that real fantastic ping pong moment, you know, the audience picks up on that. That's why I actually like to do that, a lot of that interplay, because this isn't about just Bruce and me, this is about everyone, you know, we're all involved in this. It's a group experience, and that's really important to me.
Now, getting ready for the studio session today, I was doing a little research and caught a recent video of you two with a guitar, Bruce, that you recently bought, that's Barney Kessel's guitar. Yes. I would love to talk guitars with you two. Let's start with the story of your acquiring this instrument.
Well, the story with Barney goes way back. Barney, a lot like you know us, plays a lot with other guitar players, played a lot, was a great mentor. I played with him since I was, I think, 17. He got just hired me out of the blue on a gig. He heard me in San Francisco and hired me to play with him. And he was doing the same with Martin over across the pond. Mm-hmm. And I just played with him for years, would do lots of touring, and ended up playing, subbing in that band, The Great Guitars, when they needed a guy on the West Coast. And Barney always, he was a really rare guitar player. Okay, because guitar players are not generally monogamous with guitars.
Oh, got me worried there.
Guitar players have lots of guitars and play lots of guitars throughout their career. And like, for instance, the typical nightmare for a guitar player is you dream you died and your wife sells your guitars for what you told her you paid for them.
No.
Yeah, so Barney was really rare, and then for his jazz gigs, not during his studio work, but his jazz gigs, pretty much from mid-50s on or early 50s, he played one guitar his whole career. And so I got to play with him on that. I played with that guitar, as did Martin and many people. And so it's really strange to have an instrument, first of all, be in one guy's hands that long, and second of all, to have been on so many iconic recordings and situations. I mean, that playing the blues with Billy Holiday and Lester Young, that old video, that's Barney. They never showed him because it was a mixed band and they didn't want to show up. You see his hands, it's Jimmy Rolls on piano too. You only see their hands, but that guitar, that's the guitar four fingerboards ago, you know, and the neck got broken. A million things have happened, but that's also on the famous Cry Me a River.
Julie London, the
Julie London record, which that introduction was the Stairway to Heaven before it. I mean, that was the one guitar thing that every guitar player played, you know, and he started the Pole Winners, the first real guitar trio establishment, guitar, bass, drums as a rhythm section. That's the guitar that did it. So I was real dear friends with his widow when he passed, and I did play the guitar a lot when he was sick. And it got auctioned off and went away, and I had some sort of weird paranormal intervention during COVID, and I contacted the guy who had the guitar, and I got it. And then I built that project with John Clayton on Ray Brown's bass, which is now gone because it went in the fire in Altadena. And Shelly Mann's drums, which are up in this area. Gary Hobbs has them. So I ended up with the guitar, and I played it for a long time, and now I've still got it, and I play it. But it's an amazing piece of history and a wonderful family heirloom.
Yeah, yeah. And Martin, you got to take a quick spin on the Barney Kessel guitar. What could you, playing it and looking at it, what could you learn about Barney as an artist just from the instrument?
Eccentricity, probably. He was kind of eccentric guy, wasn't he?
Kind of.
And the guitar was, he was very unique, and the guitar was unique, and it was him. It was just an extension of him. It wasn't like a real expensive guitar. It was a kind of less expensive model, but he had lots of things done to it. And his DNA was in that guitar. Actually, a very good friend of mine who was a guitar, a luthier and guitar repair guy, he did some work on Barney's guitar, and Barney left it with him. This was out in Annapolis. And Jim had the guitar, and he fixed something. You know the brass plate that's on the guitar, where the jack plug goes in? Jim fixed that, and then he looked at the guitar and said, you know, this is kind of dirty, this guitar. I wonder when he last cleaned it. So he cleaned it all up and polished it. You don't do that to a guitar player.
It's got the mojo on it.
Yeah, and he came back, his face drops. He says, you've taken all the soul out of my guitar. You know, because, you know, it's got that, it really did, literally had his DNA in it. He's the only person to play that guitar for all that time. It's a very magical instrument. It really is. I love that guitar, and I've played it quite a number of times.
I'd love to ask you both about your first guitars. Bruce, your first guitar, did you treat it like a girlfriend you didn't want to scare away, or is this something you really played it into the ground and, you know?
Well, I played it a lot. It was, you know, just a little cheapo classical guitar, and I love playing it. And I was a piano player before
right,
that.
Right.
And I found the guitar wonderful that I could carry it around. It just, the portability factor was just very compelling. And so I played it a lot, but then I kind of moved on pretty quick. So my first guitar was just sort of a beater of sorts,
right.
But I'm very grateful to have learned on it, gave it to somebody else, you know, to start with.
And Martin, how about you, your first guitar?
Well, my dad came home one day with this guitar. It was like a Spanish guitar, but it had metal strings on it. And it had, the strings were so far away from the fretboard. And I was only four, you know. And I'm trying to press this thing down. And I thought, you know, this guitar thing is really difficult, isn't it? And I didn't know. You know, I thought all guitars were like that. It wasn't until later on I tried a guitar and I thought, this must be specially made for somebody that's, you know, got arthritis or something. I mean, but it's just a regular guitar. But I'd been playing away with this, and it should have put me off. But it didn't. It had the reverse. I was determined. I'm going to play this thing. Our country was kind of flooded with these guitars that came from Russia. I don't know how they got. I think a ship crashed into a cliff somewhere, and somebody took all these guitars off, and they found their way in all these markets. And it was terrible, terrible thing. I had that, and then the guitar I had after that wasn't much better. Actually, I didn't really have a good guitar until I was in my teens, probably about 17. And I was 17. I was playing on the QE2, going across the Atlantic,
yeah.
And it stops at New York, and went into a music store there and bought this Gibson, guitar. And wow, this is fantastic, because the guitars I had before were awful. I don't know how I stuck with it, really. I just must have been very determined.
Yeah.
But well, I got nice guitars now.
Let's get a number from each of you. How many guitars do you own, Martin?
It varies. Because I also design guitars, and I've got my own, like this guitar is my own design. This is my own model. So sometimes the prototypes come in, but I think I've got a regular collection of about 16 or 17, 18, mm-hmm. something like that. I've had more and less, but for a long time, I only played one guitar, like Barney.
Right.
I had a guitar that was given to me by my mentor, Ike Isaacs, and that was the guitar that I played with Stefan Grappelli. All the years that I played with him. And I didn't think I would ever play another guitar. That was going to be, I was going to be like Barney, one guitar. I'm a one guitar man.
How about you, Bruce? Do you have quite a collection?
Well, you know, there's the old saying, how many do you need?
Right.
Just one more. But I don't have many. I have like four or five. And I generally try to keep it that way. I just don't feel, I feel guilty.
Yeah.
Like they're not, they're in a case not singing.
Right.
Not
right,
out in the world. It feels very...
Mine are hanging on walls in the studio.
Yeah, that, so that would be a good idea for me to do that. But
otherwise, you don't get to play them, do you?
We have earthquakes. It's another
Of course, yeah.
It's good to keep them in cases. But I basically, I don't know. I mean, I haven't really counted recently, but it's three or four, I'm sure, or five.
I think I've got 17 and a tenor banjo. But I don't tell anyone about that, usually.
I was going to ask Martin if you, because sometimes you might see a trumpet player, he's only got one trumpet, but maybe he's got a pocket trumpet and a flugelhorn, something like that. And I wonder if you have any non-guitar-ish instruments like ukuleles or banjos that you also play.
Well, the ukulele was the first instrument that I played, because I was about 3 years old, got this little ukulele. And then, but yeah, I also play mandolin a little, but just for fun.
Yeah.
And... I played in a Dixieland band when I was in my early teens, and I had to play some banjo on that. I got this tenor banjo. And at the time, I was probably the worst banjo player in the British Isles. And believe me, there was a lot of very stiff competition at that time. And I just wasn't very good. I didn't fall in love with it in the same way that I fell in love with the guitar.
How about you, Bruce? Do you play any other guitar-ish instruments?
I play the bass, you know. I have a little U-bass. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, ukulele bass. Yeah. It sounds great.
Yeah, and I have a ukulele, and it lays around the house. I have a melodica. I still have a piano.
Nice, nice.
There's usually a saxophone or a trumpet around that I'm blowing on.
Nice.
Wow, didn't know that. Your secret's out. I don't feel so bad about the banjo now.
Yeah, right, believe me. There's a reason why you haven't heard it.
I want to finish with one more question about a guitar player. This is a big centennial year in the world of jazz, especially Miles Davis and John Coltrane, both born 100 years ago. I think Tony Bennett is another one. I think Julie London may be born 100 years ago this year. But Bucky Pizzarelli is the great guitarist who's celebrating a centennial. And I would love it if you could both give us a few words of your impressions of the great rhythm guitarist, Bucky Pizzarelli. Bruce?
I love Bucky. I mean, I never really got to play with him or know him, but I always admired his playing. And
he was one of the great guitarists that you said you worked with.
Right, he played in that group too. But you know, he was not one of the founding members, obviously. Yeah. The band did change quite a bit, but and they had a lot of subs.
Yeah, we were subs.
Yeah.
And Martin.
Yeah, actually, I worked with Bucky a few times, and it was absolute delight to play with him. But traveling with him was really good because he traveled very light. He had his guitar in a case. He had just a little bag, like with a razor and a toothbrush and things, and some socks and things. He traveled really light. And I remember once we did the first trip I ever did with him, I went down for breakfast in the hotel, and he's sitting there and he's got his stage suit on, tie and everything, having breakfast. I said, "Oh, you're ready?" He says, "I only get dressed once."
Good tip for all you up-and-coming musicians. Just one guitar, one outfit, you're good to go. Martin Taylor and Bruce Forman, thank you both so much for being here. This is a wonderful, wonderful studio session.
Thank you, Abe. Thank you.
Thanks also to our studio sessions team here at KNKX with audio engineer Adam Bird. We have video producer Parker Blom with assistance from Adam Kubota. Thank you so much, Adam. And studio sessions producer Brenda Goldstein-Young. Thank you so much for your help. My name's Abe Beeson. Thanks so much to you for listening, to you for playing, and for supporting KNKX.